From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Barack Obama promised to close the U.S. detention center in Guantanamo, Cuba, but was ultimately unable to do so. Now, as Donald Trump continues Bush and Obama's legacy of unending war in the Arab and Muslim world, the question arises, what will Trump's policy on Guantanamo be, especially given that he's shown even less respect for human rights and the U.S. Constitution than his predecessors? My guest is Karen Greenberg. She's an expert on national security, terrorism, and civil liberties, and director of the Center on National Security at Fordham Law School. She's the author of The Least Worst Place, Guantanamo's First 100 Days, and Rogue Justice, The Making of the Security State. She recently wrote a piece on Tom Dispatch called Enemy Combatants Again. Welcome to the program, Karen.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
So your original book on Guantanamo was written about 8 years ago or so, and today we're still having this conversation. Many people hoped at the beginning of Obama's tenure that Guantanamo would be closed because it was one of the first actions that he took was signing an executive order and talking about it. But today it continues to remain open. Can you give us a sense of the status today? How many men are left in Guantanamo, and what is the reason why they are still there?
Okay, so the largest population at Guantanamo, if you put everybody together, was just under 800 people. George Bush transferred over 500 of them out, declaring them no longer enemy combatants, no longer dangerous enough to keep in indefinite detention in custody at Guantanamo Bay. Barack Obama released another nearly 200 of them. There are now 41 individuals in this indefinite detention realm. There are 10 individuals who are being tried by military commission. Supposedly, five of them are the 9/11 defendants. So that's basically the contours of Guantanamo right now. It's a very small population, minuscule compared to its earliest days, with only a handful of people scheduled to be tried by military commissions, in which case they would be among those who are either tried or released. It's the category of indefinite detainees that is the most problematic because there seems to be no legal recourse to end that. Habeas petitions that have been allowed in D.C. Court for the past several years, since the summer of 2008, have mostly been turned down. So, the question of whether Guantanamo, will they stay there till they die? They will periodically come up before a periodical review board, so there's always a chance some of them will be released. But consistently throughout the Bush years and the Obama years, there have been a sense that three dozen of them would likely be held there, never tried and never released. And as it turns out, that's still the population that we're stuck with.
And do you get a sense that Trump has an understanding of what Guantanamo, what the situation, what the status at Guantanamo was? And we have to ask this question because often he basically seems to appear to not having an understanding of very much of what's happening in government. Earlier this year, he made a claim that was then corrected by the White House that 122 vicious prisoners released by the Obama administration from Gitmo, quoting him here, have returned to the battlefield, just another terrible decision.
Yeah. I don't know, what he knows about what happens when they get out. It's not very hard to get your arms around the situation at Guantanamo now. It's pretty static. So I'm hoping that he's up to speed on it. I do think that and some other early remarks show that he hadn't been briefed on it, or he hadn't absorbed how he'd been briefed. But I think It was in an effort to make the point that he's made repeatedly that he wants to keep Guantanamo open. His attorney general, Jeff Sessions, has said that he thinks terrorists belong in a court that is run by the laws of war rather than by laws of the federal criminal justice system. And so I'm not surprised. I think he does understand that. I'm not surprised that he has said these things. The one thing he also said of concern at one point was that he wouldn't mind adding some Americans to the quote-unquote bad dudes who were there, which currently, under the authorization for Guantanamo, there are no American citizens there. And on an occasion years and years ago, in 2002, when Guantanamo opened, when there an American was found there, somebody with dual American and Saudi citizenship, Yasser Hamdi, he was spirited out in the middle of the night, hoping no one would notice. So it's the things he says he wants to do cannot just be done unilaterally, although in theory, he could issue executive orders changing what is now the laws binding Guantanamo population.
So, Karen, recently there was, I understand, an American man captured in Syria, found to be allegedly working with ISIS, and the Trump administration used the term enemy combatant to describe him. Explain the significance of that term and whether you think there's now a real fear that Trump could try to repopulate Guantanamo with people that his administration deems enemy combatants all over again.
Yeah, you know, this is the kind of word that it has to be intentionally used. There's no way that you could use this term without making the hair stand up on the heads of a number of people who have been fighting this battle over Guantanamo, detainees, human rights, civil liberties, and the war on terror. If you want to pick one term that would make everybody sort of stand up and say, it would be enemy combatant. And so in the simplest terms, enemy combatant can mean being put in military custody. And in fact, as I mentioned in the article, the Obama administration did keep a number of individuals in military custody for a short period, sometimes a longer period, of questioning them before they turned them over to what has become termed the clean team, or where they're turned over essentially to law enforcement interrogation for trial. And prosecution, and if they don't plead guilty, to trial. And so this two-tiered system is something that has evolved over the past decade and more years, and it hasn't had a lot of pushback. So it's, I think, sort of accepted as the way we do business. And you can see it in a case going on right now in federal court in D.C., where the alleged ringleader or mastermind of the Benghazi attack, which resulted in the deaths of, among others, Ambassador Christopher Stevens, the U.S. ambassador, they've used this as well. And so judges in federal courts have had a chance to think about this and to opine on it, as the judge in that case did. But the worry with Donald Trump and those who work for him and have talked about reopening Guantanamo for business, remember, there hasn't been a new detainee brought to Guantanamo since 2008. There hasn't been anybody in indefinite detention status or an enemy combatant status since 2009, since the Obama administration. And so what this really is a throwback in terms of language, and that's what's concerning people and concerning myself. However, if you said, have you seen any active steps that have been taken that make you think that this particular individual is going to Guantanamo, we just don't know. We don't know anything about this person. We don't know the name. We don't know anything. And so it's just, it seems to be.
I mean, he could be already there and we wouldn't really know.
He could be what?
Yeah. He could be in Guantanamo we don't know. Well, journalists don't know.
It's hard to imagine that, not just because there are journalists there, but because there are a lot of military officers there who understand the rules and regulations of Guantanamo, and that without some change in the law, you can't bring an American citizen there. But so it's hard to imagine. I think the worry is not so much that he's at Guantanamo, but where is he and how long is he going to be there? And what are they doing to him? I think these are the kinds of questions that the term enemy combatant opens up.
Let's talk about another report related to Guantanamo that's been in the news. One of the detainees who's been held for 15 years without a trial, Khalid Qasem, related to his lawyer what he was going through, and the Guardian newspaper published it as an article. And basically, this is a young man who is now saying that the authorities at Guantanamo Bay are letting him die of starvation. There have been a number of hunger strikers in Guantanamo who were then force-fed by Guantanamo authorities, which in and of itself was seen as tantamount to torture. But now apparently they're stopping the force feeding as far as this particular detainee is concerned. What do you make of that?
Oh my goodness. I make of that this is an intolerable situation, and it's hard to say how it's going to end. Nine individuals, I think it's nine individuals that have died at Guantanamo, more about the same number, I guess, now that have been tried. The idea that one of the detainees would be allowed to die is a scary scenario. The force feedings have always been controversial, particularly for human rights groups. Guantanamo authorities have consistently said that force feeding is not torture, it's keeping them alive. And so now you really see a test between the defiance of the individual detainee who's been there for 15 years without charge or release, and I was going to say trump card, this trump card of are you going to let me die? So it's a challenge on both ends. It's sort of like a game of chicken. It is extremely unfortunate, and it highlights the extent to which detainees have been willing to go to. It's not just to protest; it's to escape the kind of limbo that they've been put in for a decade and a half. Remember that hunger strike started almost simultaneously with the start of Guantanamo. During those first months, there were the first hunger strikes, and the military that was on the ground trying to set up a camp without rules, without protocols, were horrified at the prospect that somebody would die on their watch. And so they tried a variety of interventions. Some of them led to force feeding, some of them were psychological interventions, some of them had to do with allowing them to call their families back home. I mean, there was a variety of things that went into this. Now, what you see is just the choices are minimal, and look, Guantanamo is a it's so unfortunate that Guantanamo did not close during Obama's years. This was always the fear of human rights advocates, of civil libertarians, of the defense attorneys, and even of prosecutors. This was always a worry that if it didn't close, you would have a situation where it could be returned or made worse than how the kind of rigorous treatment that went on and brutal treatment that went on during certain years of the Bush administration. And now we're there. And the question.
So the architecture has been left in place, and with somebody like Trump in power, the worst possible thing that one could do with these things that one could imagine doing may actually happen. And I just want to quote a little bit from the piece by Khalid Qasim. This the young detainee who related the following words to his lawyer. He said, "I haven't had food in my stomach for 23 days. 20th September was the day they told us they would no longer feed us. They have decided to leave us to waste away and die instead." Later, he says, "Some will say I brought the pain on myself, but how can that be? I did not ask to be brought here. I did not do anything that justified being kidnapped and hauled halfway around the world." Khalid Qasim is a Yemeni citizen who was basically being held, has been held in Guantanamo for more than 15 years. We don't just hear enough about the fact that these are human beings. It's so easy to kind of think of them just as a number, as these abstract things, but they're living, breathing human beings. And this particular person is, just sort of calling on the world to do something about this. It's just horrifying.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say about thinking about the detainees as human beings. In the early years of Guantanamo, when Donald Rumsfeld, then Secretary of Defense, would be asked how many people are now at Guantanamo Bay detention facility, he would often, if not always, answer about and then give a number. And you're sort of like, what do you mean about? Like, how many people are there? And I think it underscored a sense of not wanting to deal with the reality. Or speak in terms that underscore the reality of the fact that the conditions in which these legal conditions in which these individuals were being held, as well as the conditions of detention.
Is there a sense that you have that of the trials that are in play right now that they would be impacted by Trump being in power?
You know, the military commissions still have the same people in charge. Look, the Supreme Court this week decided not to hear two challenges to the military commission's process, that the case of al-Balul and the case of al-Nashri. So, you know, whether this would have happened in a different era or under a different president, we don't know. Do I think more people will be tried by the military commissions under this president? I have no idea. But the military commissions, when you say interfere with the process, these commissions have never pr really proceeded. You now have the
Right.
people, I mean, the beginning of the 9/11 co-conspirators trial is scheduled for, at current, January of 2019. So to say it's going to make it worse, you know, how much worse could this be? We're not using these commissions. They're not, for the most part, going forward. And it's really not fair to the American people that there's never been a trial of the alleged perpetrators of 9/11.
And there's been this sort of weird sort of limbo exception, you know, legal vagueness created around these men who are held in Guantanamo to try to, you know, justify why they're there. It started out as being sort of a potentially temporary solution, and now it seems as though this prison will just remain open for as long as these men remain alive. And when the last one dies, who knows what'll happen then? I mean, basically, we've consigned a small number of these men to, as you said, the indefinite detention means they will die there.
Yeah, it's you know, it's something interesting you just said. You said we thought it was a short-term solution. I'm not sure we even thought that far. I'm not sure the
Right.
government really thought that far to think whether it was short-term or long-term. What they decided was that they couldn't use the federal courts for this, and that they didn't want prisoners of war. They could have, you know, avoided the federal court system, called them prisoners of war, and abided by the rules which pertain to prisoners of war in terms of interrogation, how long they're held, conditions of being held, etc. And what the administration tried to do was to keep some of to have full control over what rights these and what kind of treatment these individuals would get, and what kind of treatment these people would or wouldn't get. And that was outside military law, outside domestic law, outside international law. And the fact is that when you break something like the legal, any legal structure that would have spoken to the Guantanamo detainee situation, once you break it, it's almost impossible to find a way out. And that's what you've seen. We use the word quagmire for a lot of things in this country, you know, from the Vietnam War forward. But if you want to hear a real quagmire, it's Guantanamo Bay. Listen, President Obama, there's no doubt in my mind that he wanted to close it. None. And it's intractable. And once you violate the laws and the rules in this messy a way, it's very hard to go forward. And that's the biggest lesson of Guantanamo.
Those who look back on George W. Bush as benign in light of the Trump administration would certainly do well to remember what his administration started in Guantanamo. So, Karen, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article from our website. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
My guest is Karen Greenberg, an expert on national security, terrorism, and civil liberties, director of the Center on National Security at Fordham Law School. She's the author of a few books called, one of them being The Least Worst Place, Guantanamo's First 100 Days, as well as Rogue Justice, The Making of the Security State. And her latest article is entitled Enemy Combatants Again, which you can find at Tom Dispatch. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.